Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Susan Shand, Jonathan Evans, Anne Ball, Ashley Thompson, and Katie Weaver. But first, this report from Brian Lynn.
Scientists say they have found high levels of small plastic particles in Arctic snow. Their findings provide more evidence that plastic is entering Earth's atmosphere and traveling great distances around the planet. A new report describing the discovery was published in Science Advances. A German-Swiss research team collected snow samples from the Arctic and other areas. They included northern Germany, the Bavarian and Swiss Alps, and the North Sea island of Heligoland. When the researchers examined the samples in a laboratory, they were surprised to find very high levels of microplastics. Microplastics are very small pieces of plastic. These plastic particles are generally smaller than 5 millimeters in length. Other studies have found microplastics in the environment. They come from the disposal and breakdown of man-made plastic products and industrial waste. Melanie Bergman co-wrote the report on the new study. She told the Associated Press that while her team did expect to find some microplastics in the samples, they were surprised by the very large amounts. Bergman is a researcher at the Alfred Wegener Institute in the German city of Bremerhaven. The study found the highest levels of microplastics came from the Bavarian Alps. One snow sample from the area had 154,000 microplastic particles per liter. Samples collected from the Arctic had much lower levels. However, even samples from the Arctic contained up to 14,000 particles per liter, the study found. Earlier studies found signs of plastic in Arctic areas. Those microplastics were found in coastal areas, sea ice, the seafloor, and the seawater's surface. The new study attempted to explore how some of the material could have been carried in the atmosphere. A limited number of earlier studies did find microplastics in the air of some cities, including Paris, Tehran, and Dongguan, China. Bergman said in a statement she believes the new study clearly shows that the majority of the microplastic in the snow comes from the air. She said this idea is supported by research that studied the atmospheric movement of pollen from plants. In those studies, scientists confirmed pollen had traveled great distances to reach the Arctic. Other studies found that dust particles, which are similar to microplastics, traveled more than 3,500 kilometers from the Sahara Desert to the Northeast Atlantic. Bergman said the new study suggests that much of the microplastic found in Europe and the Arctic comes from the atmosphere and snow. This additional transport route could also explain the high amounts of microplastic that we found in the Arctic sea ice and the deep sea in previous studies, she said. The research team discovered many kinds of microplastics. Some were from paints commonly used to coat the surface of automobiles and ships. A rubber-like substance was also found that could have come from vehicle or boat parts or packaging materials, the report said. While there is growing concern about the effect of microplastics on the environment, scientists are still studying their possible harmful effects on humans and animals. Bergman said she hopes the new study will lead to more research on this issue. She also said she believes that microscopic plastic particles should be included in worldwide observations of air pollution levels. We really need to know what effects microplastics have on humans, especially if inhaled with the air that we breathe, Bergman said. I'm Brian Lynn.
North Korea is asking its young middle-class women to give up international cosmetics and use products made in their own country. The cosmetics campaign comes as international trade restrictions tighten and products made in other countries become even more difficult to get. Pushing homegrown beauty has been a political goal since the days of the North's first leader, Kim Il-sung. But the effort has become stronger under his foreign-educated grandson, Kim Jong-un. Recent defectors and North Korea experts say the campaign is having some success because of the popularity of South Korea's K-beauty movement. The K-beauty movement uses products with natural ingredients that are plentiful in both Koreas. But North Korea's attempt to create K-beauty products of their own has met with some quality issues. Manufacturers also have difficulty importing the few foreign ingredients that cosmetics require. Leader Kim Jong-un once dismissed North Korean beauty products, saying they make raccoon eyes, reported the Japan-based Chosun Shinbo newspaper in 2015. But Kim has since visited cosmetic factories several times with his wife to popularize the products. Earlier this year, North Korea's state-run television, KRT, showed a video about Pyongyang Cosmetics Factory. It showed a woman replacing Chanel products with North Korean products. Lots of foreign customers living in the state visit our shop, Yang Su-Zhuang told Reuters on a rare visit to the capital last year. She is a sales assistant at the Pyongyang Cosmetics Factory. Chanel, in response to Reuters' questions, said it did not export products to North Korea. It suggested the products were illegal copies. North Korea has long controlled its people's appearance. Blue jeans and clothes with writing in English were banned under Kim's father, Kim Jong-il. The closed country was trying to keep Western influences out. But that has changed since Kim came to power in 2011. He and his wife, Lee Sol-ju, began making public appearances. Lee, a former musician, wore colorful clothing that appealed to a desire for self-expression, explained Nam Sung-wook. He is a professor of North Korean studies at Korea University. Kim Jong-un gave rise to First Lady Lee Sol-ju, who furthered the regime's interest in cosmetics, he said. Kan Na-ra is one North Korean defector who said she used to buy South Korean cosmetics at private markets that help form the North's informal market economy. I really wanted to copy K-beauty makeup when I was in the North, she said. Today, North Korean women are asked to wear the kind of clothing and makeup used by either the First Lady or the all-woman Moran Bong musical group. Moran Bong is North Korea's answer to South Korea's popular K-pop music. I'm Susan Shand.
Ozagan is one of the most popular singer-songwriters in the Central African Republic. Recently, he went to the United Nations European headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland, to make the world pay attention to the struggles in his country. The Central African Republic has had a civil war since 2012. Ozagan sings about the difficulties his people face. He sings about the search for food in a country where insecurity prevents people from farming and harvesting their crops. He sings about people fleeing to escape the violence of armed groups. And he sings about the terrible things people will do in order to feed their families. Ozagan says he was forced to quit school to earn money for his family. He was the only person able to support his mother and four younger sisters. He tells VOA there were no jobs in the Central African Republic, so he went to Brazzaville, Congo, in search of work. Ozagan says no one would offer him a job because he was too young and too small. He says he spent 4 years as a homeless street child. What saved him, he says, was his music. He adds that his difficult experience also led him to create an organization to help homeless young people. The musician notes that money raised through his concerts helps support 32 homeless children. That number includes 10 Muslim children who live in a separate district in Bangui. He explains Muslims and Christians live in separate areas in the capital. He says he is working to end this separation and to bring the two communities together. The United Nations calls the Central African Republic a forgotten crisis. War has displaced more than 1 million of the country's 5 million people. Nearly half that number are refugees in neighboring countries. The World Food Program reports that more than 1.8 million people are suffering from serious food shortages. WFP spokesman Hervé Verhoesel says these people do not know where their next meal will come from. He says the World Food Program supplies food to 600,000 people a month. He says the agency would like to increase that number to 800,000, but needs to raise $35.5 million by the end of the year. Until then, Özagen says he will continue to raise his voice in song for the people of the Central African Republic. I'm Jonathan Evans.
The way cloth is made and what it is made of is changing. Companies that make textiles are trying different materials because people want products that are more sustainable or better for the environment. Shannon Mayer leads home products development at the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. She said there is a real push for sustainability now, and the home textiles industry is waking up to that consumer call. It is about reducing waste during textile production, she said. Mayer added, it is also about reusing or recycling waste to produce other products. So there is zero waste. For example, many people around the world have become concerned about the harm waste plastic does to the environment. Mayer thinks people are willing to pay 5 or 10% more for a sustainable product. Some examples are rugs and outdoor fabrics or cloths. They are increasingly being made with recycled materials instead of new plastics. Much is happening with clothing design, too. Companies are using new textiles made from sustainable resources. They also are exploring the use of textiles that can be composted. Mayer said companies like Adidas and Nike are using some of these new ideas for their products. A show at the Cooper Hewitt Design Museum in New York City is presenting some of these ideas to the public. It includes a dress made by a Japanese design team that is made with naturally glowing silk. The team said the cloth is made from silkworms injected with a green fluorescent protein that comes from jellyfish, a kind of sea creature. The museum also is showing a version of an Adidas shoe made completely from plastic taken from the ocean. Other examples of sustainable products include a shoe that would be completely compostable and a textile made from algae, a water organism. Andrea Lips works at the Cooper Hewitt Design Museum and helped organize the show. She said there is optimism when people see designers taking on this difficult problem. She said the public support and creativity around such textiles will continue. To help companies tell the public what they are doing, the Sustainable Furnishings Council provides an online list. It is meant to identify environmentally responsible companies for consumers. About 400 member companies are on the list. They each have made their own public and confirmable promises to sustainability, said Susan Ingalls. She is executive director of the Sustainable Furnishings Council.
mayor of the Fashion Institute of Technology, said people are talking more these days about the value chain, showing that not only are you certified as being environmentally responsible, but all of the factories in your production process are certified. I'm Ann Ball.
On our national parks journey, we travel to the southwestern state of Arizona. There, we find a strange and colorful landscape. Yellow, red, and even purple rocks and sand cover the hilly earth. Huge pieces of ancient trees twist in unusual ways. The area is the only national park that includes a part of the historic U.S. Route 66. Welcome to the Petrified Forest National Park.
The word forest may mislead visitors. The park is in a desert, and the word petrified, which can mean afraid, may scare visitors away. But fear not. Petrified Forest gets its name from the trees that have, over millions of years, turned to stone. That natural process is called fossilization. Much of the Petrified Forest formed from tall trees called conifers. They grew over 200 million years ago near waterways. During floods, water forced the trees up from the ground. Over time, the wood from the trees became petrified.
The Petrified Forest National Park is one of the wonders of Arizona. It sits within the Painted Desert. A Spanish explorer in the 1500s gave the place its name. It is easy to see why. The desert looks like an artist's canvas. Brilliantly colored mudstones and clays cover the land as far as the eye can see. They contain bentonite, a clay that is the product of changed volcanic ash. The oldest geological formations in the park are about 227 million years old. Differently colored formations show different time periods. The Blue Mesa formations, for example, have thick bands of gray, purple, blue, and green mudstones. They are about 220 million years old.
Evidence of humans in the Petrified Forest dates back 13,000 years. People first came here after the last ice age. Early Paleo-Indian groups used the petrified wood to create different kinds of stone tools. They used them to hunt large animals. The climate warmed over several thousand years. Humans began building villages here and growing food, such as corn, squash, and beans. In the 900s, people in the area began building above-ground houses called pueblos. They also made pottery for cooking and other uses. Scientists today
find evidence of early pottery and Pueblo homes all over Petrified Forest National Park.
A long and severe drought in the early 1400s forced most of the people living here to move. But new groups soon arrived. European explorers came in the 1500s. By the 1800s, American pioneers began settling in the area. And by the 1920s, American motorists were traveling on U.S. Route 66. The road winds through the heart of the Painted Desert. Long before humans entered the area, though, dinosaurs dominated. Petrified Forest National Park is a world-class area for fossil research. The fossil record at the park preserves some of the earliest dinosaurs. The dinosaur fossils are from the late Triassic period, called the Dawn of the Dinosaurs. They help scientists reconstruct ancient environments.
The land here was set aside as a national monument in 1906. Congress moved to protect it because of its unique ecosystem, record of human history, and dramatic southwestern scenery. It became a national park in 1962. More than 800,000 people visit the Petrified Forest National Park each year. The best way to explore the park is by foot. The National Park Service maintains many kilometers of walking trails. The Crystal Forest Trail is a 1 kilometer path. It is named for the crystals that can be seen on the pieces of petrified wood. The trail is one of the best chances to see this fossilized wood up close.
The Petrified Forest includes many shapes and sizes of wood. From large logs to stumps to the smallest remains of plants. Most of the petrified wood found in the park is made up of quartz. Quartz is a hard, colorless mineral. The wood sometimes shines in the sunlight as if covered by glitter.
The Painted Desert Rim Trail offers visitors a good chance to see the park's wildlife. Lizards and rabbits are common. So are snakes and foxes. Early morning or evening are the best times to see animals. These are also the times when the sun makes the Painted Desert the most colorful and spectacular. But whenever you choose to visit, the Petrified Forest and Painted Desert will awaken your senses and your curiosity about this ancient place. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.